Welcome back. We're continuing in our study of developing Great Commission skills. What we're going to be doing with this session is we're going to be taking a look at the skill topic, people types. Now, we all understand that people are complicated creatures. They've been subjected to in-depth analysis over the years. Now, we don't have time to dive into completely in-depth analysis, but we are going to take a look at some of the obvious differences in people and how that might affect vision casting and creating ownership. There are lots of tools out there that have been used to measure personality, to look at trends or strengths or temperaments among people, including things like the DISC profile, the Myers-Briggs type indicator. Gary Smalley has his personality classification. We also have Tom Rath's strengths finder, and more recently, Enneagram personality test. There are many, many more out there. And I'm a fan of these kinds of things. I think they can be very helpful in helping to understand what makes a person tick. But we're not going to take that deep dive, but we are going to look at four basic personality types of people, and we're looking through this lens of how they are going to respond to a new vision, in particular a Great Commission vision. So let's take a look. When we look, first of all, the first type, we're going to look at theorists. Now, theorists are people who can grab hold of an idea in its theoretical form, in its projection, in its visionary form. It's hypothetical. It's not real yet. It's just projected. It's foreseen. It's envisioned. And so what we have with the theorist is someone who can catch that idea, can buy into the theory, and make a commitment. And that's all they need is the theory of it. If it sounds like a good idea, if it makes sense, if it's appealing, if there's some compelling element to it, the theorist is able to buy in. Now, note that on average, there are a small number of theorists. When you look at percentages of population, a small percentage of a population will be a theorist. And when you look at the church in particular, you look at congregations as they go through plateau into long-term plateau, into decline. The deeper that a church gets down the backside of the church life cycle, the less likely the presence of theorists would be prevalent. Theorists would have a tendency to be among the first to leave a church that was struggling from long-term issues, because that just wouldn't be compelling, it wouldn't be attractive, it wouldn't be motivational for a theorist. So that's kind of a rule of thumb, that the deeper a church is into the backside of the life cycle, the less likely the presence of theorists. Now, I understand this mentality of theorists pretty well because I am actually a theorist myself. And I've got numerous things in my background that can attest to that. First of all, we've got a lot of moves that our family has made. One such move was a move from our home base in Richmond, Virginia, out to Southern California to plant a church. Well, the idea of it was compelling. God had already shown us as a family that something was coming, that something was going to be centered on evangelistic ministry, that it would be away from Richmond. In fact, we were already preparing the house to sell and making plans to be making some kind of move. Now, we weren't thinking Southern California at the time. I was in a very different mindset professionally. Truth is, I was working as a professional musician, which was my career path as a young adult, and our plan was to move to Nashville. But an opportunity presented itself for Southern California, and it was so compelling, I just knew right away God was in this. A theorist is able to respond in that kind of short term, I don't need to know all the details, I just need to know what the idea is. And of course, I had the sense that God was in it. Well, one of the things that the offer entailed was the person that was giving me that offer said to me, well, let me bring you and your wife out here for a week, and you can look the place over, get a feel for what's here, and after you've had a chance to do some investigations and research, you can have a better sense of if this is going to be right for you and whether or not you could make this journey, make this commitment, and come out here. And here's what I said to this gentleman. I said, you know what? I said, I'm so convinced that this is the right move for us. Let's save the time and money that it would take for us to come all the way out to Southern California to check it out. We don't need to check it out. We know that this is the right move. Don't need to see it. Well, that's a theorist thinking. In this case, I'd like to think this is a sanctified theorist who is responding to the leading of God. But the way I'm wired, I didn't need to see it. The idea was enough. The theory was enough. The plan was enough. The vision was enough. Now, interestingly, about 5 years later, having made the move to California, and that church had grown substantially, and I had felt God calling me to become more deeply involved in ministries other than the music and arts ministry that I was leading. And I felt that I needed some seminary training at the time, theological training, and would need to pursue the credentials toward becoming a licensed and credentialed pastor. And so there was one occasion I was looking at going to a seminary in Orlando. Now, understand that at this time I was about 39 years old with four children. So the idea of picking up and moving was not something that we took lightly. But in this case, I had an offer from someone at the seminary to come out and spend some time at the seminary to check things out, to meet the professor, sit on some classes, discuss things with some of the key staff at the seminary, and try to figure out if this was something that God would have us do. Now, this was a bit more complicated than the move to California. There were more elements at risk, at stake. Well, my wife and I went out to Orlando and spent about a week investigating, checking it out, meeting with people. And when I came back to Southern California, I sat down with the church planter with whom I served, and he says, well, what do you think? What do you think the plan is? Did you find out what you needed to find out? Well, this was my response. I said, you know what? I came away with more questions than answers. But I just know in my gut that this is what I need to do. Classes are going to begin in August. Now, at the time, it was in March. So classes are going to begin in August, and I fully intend to be in class. Well, that's a theorist talking. The idea of it. A theorist, you know, has certain questions that he's thinking about. The questions are, is this new? Is this exciting? Is this innovative? Is this challenging? You know, is this in line with with the vision, in this case, I'm talking about a personal vision of engaging in the corporate vision of first, the church plant, second, becoming engaged in theological study. But this is the way the theorist mind works. This is what we are thinking about as theorists. Now, moving on, the next people type is the realist. Now, the realist is not going to be able to commit to the theory, to the idea. The realist needs to see what this looks like in reality. The realist is not going to be satisfied, is not going to be able to make the jump just based on idea or theory or vision alone. The realist needs to try it on for size, needs to see it, hear it, engage with the new proposal to determine whether or not this is going to work for me, whether or not this is going to make sense. So the kinds of questions that the realist is concerned about are questions like this: Is this turning out to be what I was told it was going to be? Does the reality live up to the theory? You know, there were those things that I was told about this. I took them at face value, but are they proving to be so? Is this working for me? Could I get behind this and really support it? So you see, the theorist and the realist have two different sets of criteria that need to be considered, and that will determine whether or not they will be able to commit. Next comes the pragmatist. Now, here's what's up with the pragmatist. The pragmatist is not going to buy the theory. The pragmatist is not going to buy even the reality. The pragmatist is looking at a different set of key questions. Questions like this: is this change producing positive results? Are the outcomes what was predicted, what was promised? What I want you to notice here is that there's going to be a time lag. The theorist is able to commit early in the process. The realist is going to require a little more time, because the realist needs to see the proposed change, the proposed vision in action before he or she is going to be able to commit. Now, the pragmatist even needs more time, because the pragmatist needs to see if there are early returns on this investment that make sense. And at that point, if so, the pragmatist would be able to get on board. That time lag is very important. You see, if you're expecting a pragmatist to commit early in the process, you're going to be very frustrated, and the pragmatist is probably going to feel pressure from you to commit. Well, don't ask people to do what they can't do. And if a pragmatist, if you understand that this person is wired to be a pragmatist, don't expect them to get on board just because it's an exciting new idea. Don't expect them to get on board just because there's delivery on what was promised, and people are able to see what's been proposed in action. The pragmatist has got to know, does this work? Are the outcomes what I was told they would be? Is this turning out to be as promised? Now, let me give you an example of a pragmatist scenario. Our church in Arizona, I mentioned to you, we started at 13. Well, the last month that we were holding services in the middle school, we averaged 129 in attendance. Let's round that up to 130. And at our final Sunday in the middle school, we made an announcement. We announced that we would no longer be holding services at the school. The truth is, I think I mentioned this in an earlier session, the school district would only allow us 2 years in their facility. Now, we ended up being there 2.5 years because when we hit the 2-year mark, we had already purchased property, we had architectural plans approved by the city, and we were in the process of construction. So the school district recognized that we were en route to moving on, so they allowed us this grace of an additional 6 months. But that was it. So on the final Sunday of that grace period, we made the announcement, we will not be holding services here any longer. Okay, that was clear. What was not clear is what was going to happen the next Sunday. Here's the problem. We did not yet have a certificate of occupancy from the city. And we would not be allowed in the building until we had that certificate. And so here's what we did. We made an announcement that final Sunday at the school. Next Sunday, we will be meeting at our new location. We are hoping to be in the building, but we don't have the certificate of occupancy. If we don't get it by Sunday, we cannot meet in the building. So what we'll do is we will set up a temporary meeting space, probably under a tent, out in the parking lot. So we cautioned people not to invite anyone new. This is not a grand opening. This is not a big celebration. Don't invite any newcomers yet because we might end up being out in the parking lot. So just come. If we can get inside, great. If not, fine. We'll have our service. And hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, we'll have our certificate of occupancy. We can legally meet in the building. And once we know for sure that we can do that, then we will announce to the community that we're making the move, and we will have some kind of grand opening Sunday. Now, with that in mind, the following Sunday, here's what happened. Late Saturday, we received our certificate of occupancy. And so that allowed us to meet in the building on Sunday morning. But with no advertising, no promotion of any kind, no big rollout, you know, no hot air balloons, no big celebration, no announcement, no launch Sunday, we had 180 in attendance. We went from 130 to 180 on that first Sunday, traveling without any promotion. And guess what? We never really dropped back below that. That additional batch of people that showed up, for the most part, stayed with us. Well, what was going on with that? Well, here's what was going on. We discovered in interviews with that group of people as they assimilated into the life of our church, we discovered that many folks in our community had become very interested in our church. Think back to the levels of commitment. You know, they had moved through that stage, you know, where they were observing us, they were considering us, they were visiting or thinking about visiting, but they were hesitant to visit. Why? Well, two reasons. One is lots of folks didn't want to meet for a worship service in a school, partly because many churches had attempted to get a foothold in this community, had reached that 2-year mark with the school district, and had to fold up shop. And so there was a sentiment in the community of distrust that any church that's meeting in a school is probably not going to make it long term. So let's just not get involved. Let's wait until we're certain that this church is going to survive in this community and become stabilized and permanent. And what was an indication that that was happening? Well, the indication was that when this church moves from the school into a permanent facility on property that it owns, in a building that it owns, that's when we will know that we can trust this church to survive. Now, this was not a concerted effort. In other words, that wasn't a group of 50 people that were hovering together waiting for this to happen. These were individuals, these were couples, these were families, not connected to each other, not connected to our church, just sitting on the outside looking in. But the moment we were in our facility, they were there. That is how the pragmatist mentality works. Now, it would be incredibly unfair and unproductive to try to get the pragmatist mentality to buy in early in the process as if they had a theorist mentality. Okay? So, we've got theorists, we've got realists, we've got pragmatists, and the last group I'm going to call preservationists. Now, preservationists are folks that are so married to whatever the status quo is, it's very unlikely that they're going to make that change, that they're going to be able to transition from whatever used to be to whatever's coming. And so our expectation needs to be fairly low that the preservationist is going to get involved. Now, there are times when preservationists do get involved, but it has to do for reasons other than their personality or their temperament. It might be because, there's some family member, maybe a son or daughter with a family that are attending. And so the preservationist decides, well, I'm not really happy about this, but I want to be where my family is. Sometimes there's a denominational affiliation that folks want to uphold. And so they'll try the new thing based on that. But you see, that preservationist tendency is not to make the move from whatever the past has been, whatever the status quo has been, to the new thing. Now, I'd like for you to stop for a moment as a pastor, as a leader, and I want you to think about specific individuals that are part of your church. And I want you to consider this set of questions. Who do you know that might be a theorist? Think about that person and think about what makes them tick. Think about how they've responded to new ideas, new vision in the past. Who do you know that might be a realist, that might be a pragmatist, that might be a preservationist? Now, remember, you have tools at your disposal in terms of vision casting. Remember the divide and serve principle. Remember to avoid the town hall meeting. Remember private vision casting. Remember the complementary element of public vision casting. But it's very, very important as you cast vision that you are keenly aware of the people types that you're working with. If you want to build momentum, work with the theorist first, and then move to the realist, then move to the pragmatist. And by all means, we want to include the preservationist. Just don't get your hopes up that they're going to jump in, particularly very early. You know, people are different. They're wired differently. And here's the thing. The very thing that is compelling to a theorist might actually be scary for a preservationist. So each person needs to be considered for who he or she is. We need to understand what works for them, what doesn't work for them, what the criteria are for that person to make a commitment, what kinds of questions you need to answer, how you might approach these various people types with various elements of vision casting. Now, that completes our video on this subject of people types. Next time, we're going to be considering the skill topic team casting, working together as a team to cast vision. So, may God bless your continuing efforts to serve Him. In the name of Jesus, amen.